Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello everyone, Charles Watts here. Welcome back to Inside Arsenal, where once again I'm joined by James Benge of CBS. So it is time for Inside Arsenal Extra Time, an international break version. How are you surviving the first week of the break, James?
I mean, it's this weird balance of like, on Monday I was like, oh, this is great. You know, like I don't have to think, I'm not going to a game until for a whole week, which is a long time for me. I just write a little bit about the Euros and all that. And now we've hit Thursday, I'm just like, oh God, can someone somewhere play some football? I mean, I hear you're off to a sports day. Can you live blog that for me, please? Or something?
I am off to an inter-schools sports day, but unfortunately, all I'm doing is picking my daughter up from it. We're not watching. So no, I can't live blog that. Unless you want me to live blog the pickup from the car park, then
unfortunately not.
But there are games starting tonight. In fact, as we're talking, Arsenal are in a behind-closed-doors friendly game against QPR at London Colney.
You are the absolute king of getting these scoops. This is a Charles Watts classic scoop.
There is matches involved. Not sure if we're going to get any details about it from Arsenal yet. I think they're still deciding whether they're going to put anything out or not. Urien Timber not involved, I'm told, though, which is unfortunate. When I heard about it, I was like, oh, this has got to be Timber. You know, Timber involved in this, but he's not, I hear. So that's a bit of a shame. But the likes of Partey, Tomiyasu, you know, good minutes for them as we head towards Manchester City. I'm sure the likes of, it's a strong squad left at Colney.
Yeah.
Over this break. There is, obviously, you got the England boys, Odegaard, Trossard away, Kivior, Jorginho. But there's a strong nucleus still back at London Colney. So, it doesn't surprise me. I thought he probably would do one of the behind closed doors.
Yeah.
Games. He does like them. It'd be interesting if we do get some details. I'm sure they will emerge.
I thought that.
They've shunned Watford. Maybe they leaned over the fence and Watford were doing something else. And so they couldn't.
I believe in our Football.London days, we would have said that Mikel Arteta has snubbed local, what was it? Top rival. We could probably get away with calling Watford top, couldn't we? Are they high in their table?
They're doing all right. No. I don't think the manager's been sacked this season, which is...
No, he has. He got sacked. Or did they make someone the interim head coach? Was it Tom Cleverley?
Oh, really?
Yeah. And Tom, they called Cleverley him interim head coach, which is, I was like, why? You sort of, when someone, Watford named someone interim head coach, your first two immediate thoughts are like, one, are they going to survive the week? And two, why did you not just call all the other coaches interim head coaches? Because, I mean, you know, if you got the Watford job, and I know you're local to the area, you wouldn't be looking at property, would you? You wouldn't be thinking, oh, down payment on a big house here.
No, you'd definitely be renting 100%. Yes. I totally miss that. Yeah, they sacked him last week, Ismail. He lasted till March, but he got the boot, and Cleverley is interim manager. Wow, Tom Cleverley, interim manager. So yeah, maybe that's why.
Yeah.
It's QPR this time. So yeah, we'll wait to see if we get some news. Some of the Arsenal international boys in action tonight. I think Jorginho's playing, Kivior's playing. It's Kivior versus Karl Heine, actually. I think it's Poland, Estonia.
Oh, this is the playoffs, isn't it? Playoffs, this is actual really important football.
Yeah, Zinchenko as well for Ukraine. They've got their playoff tonight as well, haven't they? So there's some important games for those guys.
I'm going to fire them up. I had not realised that came around so soon. Probably going to have to write something on that tomorrow morning. So, I'm Team Georgia, by the way, in Pool C. I want Georgia at the Euros, Claret Skellier, and the goalkeeper who I can't pronounce. That's who I want to see.
Team Georgia. Cool. All right. Well, we will talk about international football today. Actually, we're going to start about it because we're going to have a little bit of a chat about Ben White. We're not going to spend too much time on that because the sort of main crux of the show, I think me and you are going to kind of almost sort of delve into Edu's office. I think we're going to be Edu for the next 45 minutes and map out
barbecue's, our summer. Barbecue's right there. It's under. Right. I should have taken it out from a protective wrapper, so to speak.
Classic international break fodder now. I've done it a lot this week. I mean, a lot of my videos, we've been talking with the viewers and answering their questions, and they've been sending in their responses. We've been looking a lot towards the summer, given there's not much football to actually talk about at the moment. It's been some really interesting debate in terms of what Arsenal should potentially do, who could come in, who could go. So I thought me and you would look at that a lot more in today's show and basically be technical director for the day. So, but before that, we'll talk about the kind of big international story over here, or one of the big international stories over here, and Ben White's omission. When we did the show last week, it was just sort of emerging, wasn't it? Gareth Southgate was doing his presser basically as we were recording, and he revealed Ben White had asked to be omitted from the squad. And it's certainly, I mean, people are still talking about it now. And, you know, the last couple of days, whenever I've turned on the radio, it seems like whoever's on the show has been basically doing a phone-in about it. So it certainly struck a nerve with a lot of people. What's your sort of take on what the reaction's been for the past week or so on this?
Yeah, it went so unhinged so quickly that my immediate thought was, did we get it wrong when we were talking through it? Because I thought we were quite measured and balanced. And no, we didn't actually, Charles. We, as ever, were spot on. On all sides, the response has just been absolutely mad. I mean, you know, I'm not necessarily surprised to see some of the, you know, football phone-in shows of the world talking about Ben White, you know, people talking about Ben White letting England down, whatever he's done to his career, nonsense. Equally, I see some Arsenal fans, and the vision of Gareth Southgate I see from them clashes so dramatically with sort of what the last 7-8 years have taught us about Gareth Southgate, the manager, how he has made England into a environment that players want to be in, where players can excel, where players can be themselves. And it is very clear, you know, we're seeing more and more reporting come out about the incident at Qatar that led to Ben White going home. It's very clear that Steve Holland, from what's reported, mishandled, in my view, the situation, that he maybe didn't understand Ben White's character well enough. But I don't think there was anything malicious in what Southgate did. I think potentially it was clumsy to try and shift blame away from Steve Holland when I think it would have been better to sort of say there was a disagreement. We want to move past that. But Gareth Southgate's not a bad man manager. In fact, I would say Gareth Southgate is an excellent man manager, and his staff have clearly proven that they can make England into an environment where players get the best out of themselves. I remember almost every other England manager in my lifetime, except Terry Venables, I could not say that about. So, I just think it requires a little bit of a measured response. The impression I get as well is that I think the people that are least, I don't think Ben White, for instance, is going to be lying awake at night feeling scorned by Southgate. I think people just want, you know, would want to keep this a bit quiet and take some of the air out of it. And I know that's hard in an international break where we all have to talk about things, but it's just everyone's got a bit carried away. Arsenal fans, non-Arsenal fans, they've lost their senses a bit. I don't think there's any malice in what Southgate did. It strikes me that who knows what will happen with Ben White in the future. And also, by the way, it's not the end of the world for England that Ben White's not there when you've got Kyle Walker and Trippier and Reece James maybe and Trent maybe in the future. It's just absolutely mad, Charles, and insane.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me that there's been quite a strong reaction to it. I think I think some people have to be really careful in the way they've responded to it. Like, and I'm sort of talking about sort of very high profile figures here who should know better in terms of how they're responding. And some of the stuff I've heard from big names in the industry, like Harry Redknapp's, did you hear his diatribe on TalkSport about it, which was just laughable and, you know, disgusting. What would Billy Bond say? What would Bobby Moore say? Just be quiet, Redknapp.
And see why he didn't get the England job. And
yeah, it's just reactions like that. It just makes me my blood boil, honestly. It really was listening to it in the car. I just think people have to be really careful in this day of age how they respond to it. And I think you're right. I don't think there's any malice involved from Southgate. I think he handled it badly, though, in that press conference, because I just think the line where he said, when he just outright said, look, this is nothing to do with Steve Holland, it's just a lie. You know, that's a lie. He's just lied in the press conference. There's no doubt about it that this has something to do with Steve Holland and what happened in Qatar. It might not be the only thing about that's led to this situation, but it clearly had an effect on and an impact on what Ben White ultimately decided to do with England. So I don't understand why Southgate did that. And I think that was a mistake. Had he, like you said, sort of owned it a little bit in that press conference and accepted that some things had gone on which had sort of added to this situation, then I think he would have been in a much better place. But I don't think he's malicious by any means. And I think he has, like you said, has tended to handle the management of this England squad, which is a really difficult job to do. And he's done it very, very well over the years. So, but yeah, I just think on all sides, I think it's just been handled badly, the whole thing. And I don't think it will impact Ben White. Like, I heard someone today saying, oh, Ben, I think it was a column in the Mail, maybe, I'm not sure, but saying, oh, Ben White won't be able to sleep at night if England win the Euros. It's just like, yeah, you don't really know Ben White if you're saying that, because he'll be able to sleep fine. Seriously, he won't care because he's made his decision. He's happy with his decision. The decision he's made clearly is a decision that for himself has made him feel good and happy and content. And that's the most important thing. No, he doesn't owe a responsibility to England. Some of the chat, it's like, you know, it's that whole thing with it, football and war almost, it's sort of linking the two things together, which it just drives me mad. It's like, even just like reporting for duty and stuff, even though that sort of language, just like, it's so archaic, I think, the whole thing about it. And so it has got to me a bit. It's bugged me, the whole thing. And ultimately, the main thing is that Ben White is feeling okay and is happy with himself. And I think he will be. And anyone sort of questioning his decision and hanging him out to dry and labeling him disgusting and a disgrace is just... So on one hand, you'll be praising certain sports stars for speaking out about mental health and, you know, sort of looking after their own well-being on one hand. And then on another hand, you'll be labeling someone disgusting and disgrace for taking...
But I think the same is true of the Arsenal fans who, and I have heard those exact words on, I'll be frank here, high profile podcasts and high profile Arsenal fan media. I have heard people use very similar words about Gareth Southgate. And I think, you know, maybe they don't have that. You know, it doesn't matter who your rooting horse is there, but like, if you think he is doing this, you know, if you use those words for Southgate, I don't think you understand Southgate either.
What words are you talking about?
Disgusting, disgrace. That was done willfully, and I've heard them. And I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of, especially in the Arsenal community where we live, I just want to offer that sort of counterbalance. And I completely agree with everything you're saying about Ben White, but let's not think that everything we know about Gareth Southgate should allow us to make an informed judgment that this almost certainly was not done to damage Ben White's career.
Oh no, I absolutely don't think it was done to damage Ben White at all. It's just not the case whatsoever. I just think he made a mistake in that press conference in the way he handled it, and that could have been done better. But right, let's move on quickly before we get onto our sort of the main part of the show. Just Tommy's new deal was finally announced. Was it yesterday? Yeah, it was yesterday.
Yeah.
Now, interesting one. 2.5 years, basically, isn't it? Till 2026. I mean, it's not even 2.5 years, is it? It's basically 2 years plus one to get him through to the end of 2026, but then potentially 2027 with the option. Not the longest of deals. Do you think, and this is my sort of take on it all, is that this sort of injury record and everything like that has played a part in that, the length of that deal when it comes to Tommy Astu? And for Arsenal, it's kind of like, okay, we want to reward you, we will reward you, but we have to take into account the lack of availability you've had since you've arrived, and so let's come to a bit of a compromise here, and it's a relatively short term one, because Arsenal labelled it as long term, but that's not a long term deal.
That is the one time where they really screwed themselves with their constant insistence that anytime anyone puts a pen on a piece of paper, it's a long term contract. Mm. Yeah, I think it's actually quite impressively smart move from Arsenal. I know when we've talked about Tomiyasu's contract in the past, we have said things like, and you have said, what happens if he gets, you know, injured, if you're paying 100+ grand a week for a player that misses half the season? So I think this is a smart bit of insurance from Arsenal. I mean, they've already proven as well to Tomiyasu when he's given that offer, and I'm sure he would have liked more years. They've showed, like, you know, look, if you perform well, and I suppose in his case, it will also be if you prove you can be fit, we can easily revisit this subject. We can sign you up for more years, because as long as Takahiro Tomiyasu is happy with his role at Arsenal and is able to deliver it, I can't think of many players who would be higher in the sort of list of people Mikel Arteta would want to keep around. When I say great guy around the dressing room, it's not necessarily like, you know, he's not a Martin Odegaard style vocal leader, but he's someone that always works hard, does everything the club ask of him, you know, internally, externally. But yeah, you have to give yourself some level of insurance against what happens if he misses another third half of a season. You don't want to end up in a Abu Dhabi situation, or even like a, you know, I spent a lot of time writing about or thinking about Chelsea this week. You don't want to be in a Reece James situation mm-hmm. with Tomiyasu. So yeah, it's a smart deal. And honestly, it wouldn't shock me if within the next 18 months he's signing another one, because I don't think there's much to this beyond impact injuries and rushing yourself back, but we'll see.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I think it's a very smart move by Arsenal, I think. And it's a good deal for them. It's still not putting him into extravagant wage territory where you think, you know, it's a bit of a risk given the injuries. And he's such a good player when he's fit. He's such a useful player when he's fit. You know, right backs, left backs, centre back, just brings you so much sort of versatility and gives Mikel so many options. And like you said, it's sort of behind the scenes in a change room. He's so popular. Not so much like, you know, as you say, he's not that kind of Odegaard type leader. He's not that loud dressing room presence who, you know, has everyone smiling and laughing all the time. But he just gets total respect from his teammates for the way he works, the way he handles himself, how he approaches training every single day when he's fit, and his quality. I mean, you see whenever he scores a goal, how happy every single player is for him when he scores a goal, and the sort of celebrations they've had with him when he scored earlier on in the season. And yeah, really popular player. And it's an interesting one. I mean, basically kind of wraps up that group when it comes to contracts. I mean, this is going to lead us into the bit we're going to do now, where we're going to look at the squad and sort of look ahead to the summer and the work that Edu and Arteta and everyone has got to do coming up, because it's a really important period coming up. Every summer is important for Arsenal, but this one again is just really important. And when you look at the work that's been done on the squad and the renewals going back to, you know, probably starting with, I don't know, Gabriel way back when, it seems like well back 18 months ago, whenever it was, and then everyone else who signed a new contract, all your big hitters like Bakayo, Gabriel Martinelli, Martin Odegaard, you know, everyone. And now you kind of got to the end of that line with Ben White and then Tomiyasu. So it's like, who's next? Where do you go to next? You're almost at the Zinchenko, Gabriel Jesus.
And you are with Zinchenko.
Yeah.
2 years left.
Stage of things. So, and it feels like they only signed yesterday. It's like,
it's because they're always injured.
Maybe so. So, right. We're technical directors now. We're basically Edu, James.
No, I love it.
Edu, Richard Garlick and Arteta combined. I've certainly not got the hairline of of at least two of them. In fact, all three of them. So you look at the Arsenal squad at the moment as we head towards the summer. What do you think the priorities are going to be come the summer? And before we get onto incomings, maybe we should start on, when you look at that group who is there, who do you think that won't be there next season? Because they're going to have to make some big decisions. We know they need to bring in some money and improve on selling and add to the transfer kitty, something they've not really been able to do too well over the last few years. So, but there is maybe, when you look at the summer, the opportunity to to sell some who could generate some pretty hefty funds. So what are your thoughts on when you look at that squad right now and what Arsenal might do in terms of moving players on and who could might not be there come the start next season?
Yeah, the first thing to say is, you know, it's been hard for Arsenal for a number of years to sell their fringe players, but yeah, not many takers for high-waged players that are in the fringes of a team that finished eighth. I think that becomes different when you're in the title race in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. To run down that list, we all know Aaron Ramsdale, we expect him to go. We expect that he'll want to move on.
We can strike a line through Cedric Suarez. You know, we know that that's the end of contract.
Farewell. Yeah, a devastating farewell, yeah. It's one day I'm going to work out.
And he's the only one. He's the only one on that list who is going to be out of contract and gone.
Elneny?
Oh yeah, of course. Sorry, Mo as well. Yeah, absolutely. So Mo and Cedric, we can strike a line through in terms of contracts, and we don't. Well, Cedric certainly not. I cannot imagine Mo's going to get a renewal either. So those two can go.
Well, I mean, Mo likes Arsenal enough. What about if it's a rather than a pay as you play, it's like a sort of pay to play deal. Yeah, we'll sell Mohamed Elneny some minutes.
He probably would accept it, to be fair, but I don't think so. I think Mo's time is finally going to be up this summer.
Carl Heine, I also believe, is out of contract.
Yeah, I think he is.
Keep an eye on whether that one... I think they will sort of... I mean, they will talk to Carl about what he wants, because, like you said, Estonia number one. He's a player, by the way, that sort of... I've not spoken to him before, and I don't speak to many people about him, but when his name comes up, everyone talks about what a nice lad he is. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't shock me though if he went to pastures new to try and get a number one spot. Defenders, I don't really see any of them going. Jumping, you've got to make a decision on Zinchenko, but I think the decision will be very similar to the decision they made on Tomiyasu. Midfielders, I'm not sure what the market's going to be for Thomas Partey. I hate to say it because I know everyone thinks Saudi Arabian clubs are going to park £40 million on the Emirates Stadium lawn, but which Saudi Arabian clubs? The indications are growing out of the Pro League that like last summer was the exception rather than the rule. I mean, there will be every Saudi club will now have two more spots for international players. I'm sure some players will try and move on while subsidising their wages. And Thomas Partey is someone that had a lot of admirers, but he had the chance last year and rejected it. Is he necessarily going to want it? May. I don't know what Thomas's view on that would be. I know that he was not super keen on it 9 months ago or whenever it was. If he doesn't go...
It's a hard sell to...
Yeah.
Summer. Like I said, you know, Arsenal would have sold last summer if a suitable offer arrived and Thomas was open to it. But like you said, sort of neither happened and they couldn't sell. And you don't suddenly think it's going to be any easier this time around with a year basically missed through injury and another year left, you know, gone on his contract. So he's only got a year left. It's a difficult one when you look at it. I think Arsenal, ideally, if a bid came in, if you were Edu, as we are for this time, you would probably do all you could to get a good substantial offer in for Thomas Partey this summer.
He's on a good wage as well. So no money but wage off.
You're taking £200,000 a week at least, maybe a touch more than that off the wage bill if you can get rid of Thomas Partey. And basically this summer for this season for what, how many games? You've paid him all that money for no appearances this season. Yeah. And you wouldn't go into next season confident that it's not going to happen again next season, would you? So from a business point of view, from balancing the books, for bringing in money, freeing up space on the wage bill, it just makes sense to try and sell Thomas this summer. But
Juventus, £3 million spread over 6 million years.
I do, yeah. I think it's going to be a very difficult one to do. And that's why when you look at that squad list in terms of what Arsenal might do for selling players, the likes of Emil, Reece, Eddie, Aaron, those are the players I think where there is potentially going to be a market for and the opportunity to bring in some of this money that you can reinvest.
Exactly. Emil, like, I don't think a firm decision has been made, but I think I know which way that story seems to be heading.
Yeah.
I would be very surprised if Emil doesn't say to Arsenal, and this is just opinion, if anyone wants to aggregate it, but I'd be very surprised if Emil doesn't say to Arsenal, I'd like to go in the summer, which he would do reluctantly. And frankly, I think the same will be true of Rhys Nelson. In fact, I'm even more confident with Rhys Nelson that he will probably look to move. Eddie, you know, we all know what we expect to happen in the summer. So I don't see why Nketiah would think, you know, there's a long-term future for me here. So the big question is what you get for all of those. And I know you're more boosterish on that than me.
Well, but, if you're Arsenal and someone bids 30
yes,
million.
Yes, whichever, yes.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
What about 20 million?
Yeah.
For all three?
Oh, for all three?
No, not combined. 20 million per player. Not combined, but, you know, 20 million for Emil, 20 million for Eddie, 20 million for Rhys.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not expecting Rhys to go for 20 million, the way. But I think Eddie and Emil, you surely have to be expecting 20 million. If I'm Edu, I'm not accepting less than 20 million for Emil. Yeah. Or how much did Arsenal reject from Aston Villa for Emil a couple of years back? What was the last bid they did? I can't even remember. Did it get to 30?
30. And at the time I was told three times that to start the conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, in the end, they're right to reject 30, I would say.
They were right back then, yeah. But we didn't know how the story was going to play out from then.
The fiddly one with Emil is that I know that a lot of the injuries you can explain as sort of being he doesn't play very much, so when he plays, he's more vulnerable to injuries. But clubs will be thinking, you know, we don't want to spend 30 million on someone that might not play.
Yeah, but to be fair, he's been fit for quite a while. Well, there's been a couple of injuries, but for the past like 18 months, basically. Okay, if he gets to the end of the season from this point on, he's not missed that much time through injuries. He's tended to be fit more than not. He's just not played him, has he? So,
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm looking to generate £100 million, if I'm Edu and the owner says to me, right, we want to make £100 million this summer. Let's go back to these guys. We want to make £100 million this summer. You're looking at Aaron Ramsdale, what, £30 million for Ramsdale?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. £30 million for Ramsdale, potentially £20 million for Emil, £20 million for Eddie. I still think you can get more than that for Eddie, and maybe $10 to $15 million for Rhys.
Yeah, something. I mean, like, it's not quite 100, but it's obviously all pure PSR profit.
Yeah,
it's all profit on the books.
And do you look at that list and think? And I've had this question a lot this week, that there could be a surprise sale. Do you think because I don't think. There's obviously a group of untouchables, I would say, that wouldn't go unless someone offers, you know, world record breaking money for them. But someone maybe as Zinchenko, for example, we've seen like Bayern Munich have been linked with them, or I'm trying to think, Trossard, someone like that. You know, if a bid just comes in that's unexpected but does arrive on the desk, say Zinchenko, 30 million comes in for Zinchenko from Bayern Munich. In the summer.
I thought the one you were going to pick was going to be Fabio Vieira.
I don't think anyone bids for Fabio Vieira. No, I don't know. He's not played enough to warrant a bid that would end it. Considering how much Arsenal spent for him, on him, I think they'll try and still work on him for another year at least, I reckon. But Zinchenko's an interesting one, you know, with Timber's return from injury, with maybe the, you know, are we going to suddenly see White as a long-term option for an inverted, but, you know, are Arsenal going to flip things over in terms of the defence? You know, I don't think it will happen, but could you see a surprise sale from in that list this summer?
I could. So we're Eddie here. I could certainly see, given Zinchenko's contractual situation, I could absolutely see someone picking up the phone to Arsenal and saying 30 million for Zinchenko, 25. I don't think they'd accept. I think to an extent, like, I mean, Timber absence has very much made the heart grow a lot fonder. But I also just think that a lot of what Zinchenko does well is just being sort of written off, or like, oh, yeah, you know, yeah, and he passes the ball well, but like, he can't defend. He passes the ball. He is one of the best tempo-setting inverted fullbacks in the world. Mm. If Arsenal sold Zinchenko, they could not replace him with another left-back. You'd have to reconfigure your team. So I don't think they would. I mean, even just that pass to Nketiah in what was a pretty dreadful game off the bench against Porto, I can't think of more than two or three left-backs in world football that could ping that pass. And I don't think any...
I agree with you, by the way. I think a lot of people were... Yeah. Just because he's been out a lot, and it seems to be a bit of a thing at the moment to sort of get on the back of Zinchenko. But I think a lot of people are forgetting about just how good a footballer he is and how important he can be. And like you said, the numbers back that up. And also the numbers back up the fact that he's not actually that bad defensively at all. Yeah, and that a lot, he doesn't commit. It's like people think every single game he commits a mistake that leads to a goal and stuff like that. It just doesn't, that's just not true. Aerially, he's fantastic in the air. Jules, he's brilliant. So, no, I think Zinchenko's a great player, and I wouldn't be selling him. I have to admit, if I am Edu and a bid comes in for the summer, it would have to be astronomical. And I also think that Mikel Arteta would not want to lose Zinchenko. I think, Arteta, I was surprised he didn't play against Porto or start against Porto. Yeah. I went there expecting him to start because, you know, Arteta just... He just really struggles to ignore Zinchenko if he's fit. The amount of times he's barely even trained, and then you turn up on the match day and he's back in the starting 11 like that. You know, Arteta just wants him in the team. And that's obviously because of what he can bring. And Arteta's far more better equipped to decide on that than the likes of we are. So, I don't think so. I think if there is... Someone mentioned Trossard to me the other day. I'm like, would Arsenal consider selling Trossard if a good bid came in for him in the summer? And I don't think so. I don't think you would do that. That's why I just think the focus this summer will very much be on that sort of group of the likes of Ramsdale, who obviously we know it's very, very likely he will go.
Yeah.
But then the HLM boys as well. I just think that's going to be the focus for bringing in the sort of money that Arsenal want to help top up the transfer kitty. It's not going to be essential to the transfer kitty. Arsenal got going to have plenty of money to spend this summer without having to sell. But, you know, it's still important that they do bring in a bit. And I think they will do that with those players. So who are we going for potentially not being here? We're both agreeing on Aaron Ramsdale. Won't be here for the start of next season.
Yeah. Ramsdale, Smith-Rowe. I think Ramsdale and all the HLM kids. And then the ones we know.
You think all three of the HLM boys that we talked about, the big guys, Smith-Rowe, Eddie and Reece, all gone. Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I'm not, I should know this, but the sort of homegrown rule and how the squad's shaping up and things like that. If Arsenal were to lose Ramsdale, Smith-Rowe, Eddie and Reece.
That was a factor last summer.
I wonder what that does.
Martinelli and Saliba, though, are fully club-trained, homegrown.
Yeah, they are.
So you only need to find one more then. Maybe they keep one for that reason.
Yeah, well, we do know Arsenal like to do business with English clubs as well. So at the moment, so there might be someone coming in from an English club to do that. So we're probably, thinking about £90 million all in for those four if they go?
I'd take that.
All right, cool. So let's move on to incomings then in terms of the squad. Now, striker, got to be done. Are we in agreement? Midfield, I mean, if Emil goes, Emil and Reece go, I mean, you've got to be signing at the very least one wide attacker in option there. You can't let Emil and Reece go in the same window without buying another wide attacker or a sort of pocket type player, can you?
Yeah, I don't think you'd need to replace him at eight because you'd have Trossard and Vieira, but I think you would need to sort of deepen your wing depth. So yeah, I would think if both of them go, a winger comes in. And frankly, even if Nelson's still there, I think, or Emil's still there, I think a winger would come in.
Yeah.
Probably. And
another midfielder?
If they get Partey off the books.
So you think if Partey doesn't go, if Partey stays, obviously we don't know what's happening with Jorginho yet either. Actually, we haven't mentioned that, have we? We haven't mentioned Jorginho. Obviously, Arsenal were... I don't think they've actually sat down and properly opened these talks, as far as I'm aware, with Jorginho about a contract. I think the plan is to do so. But at the moment, there's a lot going on and they haven't. But they want to give him a sort of extended stay of another sort of at least a year and a half. But there's going to be a lot of interest in Jorginho from elsewhere, offering potential.
If he went, then he needs replacing as well. But, you know, I'm working off the assumption that actually, whether Arsenal like it or not, they have Partey, Jorginho and Declan Rice as options to be a six and to, build, the solid midfielders.
I think they sign a midfielder. I think they sign a midfielder, a striker and a winger in the summer. I'm not sure about a defender. Some people say they need a defender, but I look at Arsenal's defensive options and I think, again, it's a big if, but if everyone stays fit, I think they've got the options there and the versatility there to cover. I mean, they've coped this season without Timber for the whole season and while missing Zinchenko and Tomiyasu for large chunks, and yet they've still managed to cope this season. And you would hope next season the availability of at least certainly Timber, but again, you hope you'd have more of Tomiyasu and Zinchenko available. I think defensively they've got enough.
But Arteta has said in the past he thought that group was light before Timber's injury. Which is why I lean towards they'll get a versatile defender again who can... It's hard to know because Kivior's sort of come on leaps and bounds and the only people now talking about him leaving a calciomercato.com or whichever one it might be. Sorry, calciomercato.com. So, but I do... I think they may well go for a defender ahead of a midfielder because...
Do you?
They won't clear the midfield depth as much as we think they might hope to.
What do you think of Gyökeres? I was talking about it on my show today. Did you see his comments over the international break? He was in a press conference for Sweden yesterday. He was talking about all the transfer speculation and he certainly wasn't shooting it down. And he was saying, it's really fun to read and all that. Saying, I'm not taking too much interest in it, but it's really fun. It shows I'm doing something right. I was speaking about him today and that transfer fee, £85 million. I do feel like it's a bit of a risk for someone who we don't have a huge sample size of operating at the top level so far. It's only a year ago, this time last year playing in the championship. £85 million seems a lot, but, it's not my money. And when I have seen what he's been doing this season at Sporting, it's been very, very impressive. And the sort of different types of goals he's scoring are very impressive. And he looks well equipped to be able to deal with the Premier League and some of the stuff that he's going to have to face there. But would you go £85 million for him if you were a club exec right now? If you were the Kroenkes or you were Edu and you're going to the Kroenkes and saying, right, I want to trigger this guy's release clause for £85 million.
It doesn't quite feel like the right one for me. I feel like it's in a really fiddly price bracket where, if I stretch by £15 million, I could maybe get a sure thing. Right.
Who is a sure thing? I mean, that's a really...
Isak.
Who is a sure thing? You think Isak's definitely a sure thing?
If he... again, we don't know where Newcastle might sell elsewhere. We spoke about this last week. But yeah, I would think someone with Premier League experience, Isak... I don't think this will happen either. And it's a bit more of a stretch beyond 100. But Osimhen would be the other one you would think about. And equally, it's like if you trickled down, you would have a sort of a Benjamin Sesko who hasn't played as much football as Gyökeres, but like has this great profile. He looks like a sort of like someone's grown a cloned Erling Haaland in a laboratory. And you know, at least that way, it's like if a 50 million transfer goes wrong for Arsenal, it's suboptimal, but it's not the end of the world. Get 85 million, you're pricing yourself in. I would say I like him. I like that he can come short in one move and then spin in behind the next. But I wrote about Ruben Amorim this week, and it's the exact same thing where you're just like, yeah, but I don't know what it means when you do it in Portugal. And I know that, you know, you for managers and players, plenty come from Portugal and immediately are excellent. But plenty don't. At that price point, it feels like a gamble. I like the player, but it's about the price, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot of money to get wrong. And when you're Arsenal, you can't really afford to get that wrong if you're spending 85 million on a striker. Because if you do and it doesn't work out, then you're giving yourself a bit of a mountain to climb. There is no safe bet when you're buying a striker, though, is there? There's just not when you're spending that big. You look at I don't know, Chelsea, when they signed Lukaku and they brought Lukaku back and spent all that money on him, you thought that's just a guaranteed success. That's just a deal that is going to work. I remember watching him at Arsenal when that third game of the season when he destroyed Holding and Mary, I think it was. And he just looked on another level to everything. He was so strong. He was just, it was like, you know, just brushing players off. They couldn't get near him. You thought he's going to destroy the Premier League this season. And it just didn't work. And so as much as you can sign someone who you think is tailor-made for the Premier League and is just ready to go and it just won't work. So every transfer comes with a risk, doesn't it? And it'll be really interesting to see what they do. I kind of agree. I've said it before, my first choice, if I'm buying a striker, if I'm Edu, I'm going straight to Newcastle for Alexander Isak. But you know, as a lot of people point out, if you're signing Isak, you're signing someone who doesn't have the best injury record. And we've been talking about availability and how important that is. Isak's not been available all the time since he's moved to Newcastle. So that's something you have to take into account. And Gyökeres' numbers this season are just hugely, hugely
one
impressive.
One more name.
Go on, then.
Hasn't turned 27 yet. Lautaro Martinez. Inter always need to sell.
Yeah, not for me. I look at Martinez and I just think he's not going to work in the Premier League. And I'm not basing that on anything. I just feel like Martinez would end
up. We just talked about a striker that came from Inter Milan to the Premier League.
I know. I just feel like he would flop in the Premier League. I've always thought it with Martinez that I just don't think he would work in England. But I'm not sure. I was reading. He's going to. I think he'll sign a new contract with Inter, won't he? I think one is ultimately nearly went to Tottenham. Remember those stories that he was about to go to Tottenham
with Harry Kane and Son?
I was there. I was at the stadium. It was before the North London Derby. We were getting ready for kickoff, and then it was on that morning. Like all the stories about that Tottenham had actually bid for him. I think it never happened in the end. That would have been an interesting one. So interesting. Let us know in the comments, by the way, who's your first choice when it comes to the striker department for Arsenal. Know lots of you do like Gyökeres. And when we're talking about wingers, obviously we're both big Pedro Neto fans, but this latest injury for the first time, I've just been like, oh, I'd really got on the Pedro Neto train in the build-up to this summer. And then he comes back, he plays really well, and then bang, the hamstring goes again, potentially out for the season now. He's like, oh, no, I'm not sure I could deal with that with him all the time. And like you said, past injuries, you always say it, always have your voice in my ear.
Yeah.
Someone gets injuries of saying past
injuries, predictor.
Past injuries are the best indicator of future injuries. Nico Williams continues to be linked. He's got a very appealing release clause. I think about 45 million, is it?
Yes. And his brother, by the way, is like Athletic Bilbao Iron Man, always turns up. And I don't know if your brother's past injuries are quite as good a predictor of future injuries, but it can't hurt, can it?
No, not at all. Didn't he come back from the Africa Cup of Nations like the night before? Night. And he played like that. Yeah, it basically came straight from the plane off the tarmac to the stadium and played. 43 million is release clauses, which obviously is still a huge amount of money, but in modern standards now, it's actually not that much. He's an interesting one when it comes to the winger, and that name continues to be linked. Players like Michael Olise, stuff like that. Again, you've got to look at, as much as I love Olise and I think it's fantastic, if you're looking at Neto and saying no because of injuries, then Olise falls into the same category of coming and being brilliant, getting injured, being out for 6 weeks, coming back, being brilliant, getting injured, being out for 6 weeks. He does fall into the same sort of category. And I think if you're a technical director, you're a manager, you're an owner, you do have to look into that when you're investing big, big money into how often these players are going to be available for you. And I think if you've got a really clean bill of health and you can prove that you can handle the demands of a season, I think that's going to put you right towards the top of the pecking order when it comes to the list of targets.
Exactly. Yeah. I like Nico, especially for a guy that's coming off the bench. The worst thing in the world would be for Bukayo Saka to be out for 6 weeks and your backup is already out for 8.
Absolutely. Boateng at Leverkusen as well. Obviously, you're someone you've championed throughout the season. Frimpong, not Boateng, sorry. Frimpong.
Was it Kevin Prince Boateng? No, I can't see it.
Player that you've championed. Are you still on that?
Partly now I'm just like, I really would like Xabi Alonso to just keep the whole gang together. It would be great fun if he turned down Bayern and Liverpool and was just like, no, let's see if this team can go and win the Champions League. Frimpong would be an intriguing option because then you would get a right back and a right winger for one man.
Twink the Kid One here has got in touch, and a few people have been sending these in throughout the week, so he's done it as well, where he sort of looked at his dream scenario for the summer, but also a realistic one. And he's gone with dream Xerxes as the attacker, Frankie de Jong as a midfielder, Federico Di Marco's defender Chesney, who we've spoken about actually. You've got to replace Ramsdale, obviously. And we've been speaking on the channel, me and the viewers have been talking about it. And someone threw Chesney into the mix because I was saying, an experienced goalkeeper who could come in towards the end of their career, that's what I'd want as the replacement for Ramsdale this summer. And someone threw Chesney in, and I was just like, that's a brilliant idea.
He still plays, doesn't he?
I would love that. I think he is still playing for Juve, isn't he? And he is still Poland number one, I believe. But I don't know if he might think about, retiring from international football at the end of the Euros. And if should he do that, then
bring him home.
It'd just be brilliant to bring Chesney back for the end of his career. Arteta and him trained together. Whether Arteta would like Chesney, and I imagine smoking in the showers is one of his non-negotiables.
Miguel Arteta. Like in Italy, that's probably just considered par for the course.
Exactly. So I think Chesney, if he hasn't done so already, he needs to kick that habit if he wants any hope of coming back to Arsenal. But so that's his dream scenario. It's realistic. Is Gyökeres, Onana, Braithwaite. I don't know, Braithwaite realistic. I mean, the money that's been talked about with Braithwaite now is mad. You're talking like £80 million by the sounds of it. And some random keeper from Colorado Rapids as the option. So those are his scenarios. Just quickly on here, one from Amabat says, I love your content as always. I totally agree with you. A central defender in the coming window is a kind of good to have, but not must have. To be honest, if we have a full squad, we have a solid back line with Saliba, Gabriel, Tommy, Ben, Timber, Zinchenko, Kivior. An amazing part of most of our defenders can play multiple positions in required. In order to constantly be in the mix, a midfielder, attacker, winger should be our priority signings. It's better to have a squad which Arteta trusts so that he can use the bench as well. And he talks about the fact that he doesn't think that Arteta really sort of trusts that group of players who we've been talking about as potential outgoings. And I think he's definitely got a point. And I think at this stage now, where Arsenal need to go from this summer and beyond is to have a group of 17, 18 players that Arteta just absolutely trusts. And I mean, that's what Man City have built their success on, isn't it? Of having that sort of core group. Not a massive squad, but just that core squad where he can just do what he wants. He can play someone 1 week, play another next week, and have no fear about the level dropping too much. Arteta clearly isn't at that point yet, is he? He's not at that point of his squad. He still feels if he makes too many changes that the level is going to drop to such an extent that it worries him about the performance and the result. I think that this summer is going to be key to changing that.
Yeah, because they're not a million miles away either. I mean, say 15 to 17, I'm sure we could list 15. And I suppose it's 17, 18, 19 is the sweet spot. And he's not a million miles from that, which is exciting because you sort of know if you're an Arsenal fan, if you're following Arsenal, that this window could be the one where you kind of look at it at the end and you go, yeah, it's done. It's done. And there'll always be room to improve. But it's sort of the Arsenal squad is just where everyone wants it. It's so close. And the exciting part is the sort of, if they get the sales right, given all the money they'll be earning from Champions League, they are perfectly positioned to get this squad over the finish line.
Yeah. And then, I mean, there's 25. There's 25 players on that squad in that squad that we're looking at right now, and if you take Ramsdale, Cedric, who else are we saying is going? Mo, that's three. So that's 22, and then Eddie, Reese, and Emil. You're down sort of 19 at that point. I mean, it's a big squad, actually. When you talk about it like that, it is already a big squad, isn't it? There's not
got guys on loan as well, like Tierney.
Yeah. Tierney still. We don't even talk about
Lokonga.
Look, Sambi, yeah. Mika Birif tearing it up in Austria at the moment as well. It'd be interesting, actually. When we talk about a sort of core group of 17 or 18, I mean, they're already basically there. It just needs to slightly raise the level a little bit on some of the fringe players that Mikel just doesn't really seem to turn to at the moment. So it's going to be a really interesting summer. I can't wait for it. Obviously, there's a lot of football to be played between now and then, which and Arsenal got just a couple of things to try and win between now and the market opening. But it's going to be interesting to see what they do. Come the end of the window, though, what do you expect Arsenal to be in a position, like you said there, where for the first time really since Mikel's arrived, and is linked up with Edu, that they all look at the squad and think we're ready to go now. This is absolutely it.
I think it, not only that, I think at the end of the window, based on the fact that Edu and Arteta have got nearly every window right so far, I think we will look at it and we will say, this is a top three, top four squad in world football. It will be, in some order, City, Arsenal, Real Madrid. I think that might be it. If they get it right. Get it wrong, you can get caught very easily in this game.
Absolutely can. Well, I think that's a perfect place to end it. Thank you very much, James. Appreciate your time as always. We'll be back next week, everyone, for another Inside Arsenal Extra Time. You can watch my usual shows. Next one will be, as usual, going out tomorrow morning. So keep your eyes peeled for that. Thank you, mate. Enjoy the week, James. I'll speak to you soon.
Thank you very much. Speak to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.